Good morning. Today's daf Nerchin is daf Beis. Let's take a moment to take a look where we are in terms of Shas and in terms of what we're about to embark upon. So in terms of Shas, we're in Seder Kachim. We've covered the larger Masechtas now in Seder Kachim. The first three are really the big ones. Zvachim and Menachos and Chulin all are sizable Masechtas, both in Prakim and in Dapim. A secret which was revealed to me, and not just revealed to me, so I guess it's no longer a secret. In terms of the orders of Masechtas in every Seder, so for those of you who have been in the Daf for a while, you know this, but for those of you who are slightly newer to the to this endeavor, so all the larger Masechtas in the beginning of every Seder. In fact, the Seder basically runs along... super organized in terms of the larger Prakim Masechtas first, and then as the Masechtas get smaller and smaller in Prakim, so then move on from there. Which means to say that in terms of the Dapim, don't look at the Dapim in terms of identifying what's a large Masechta and small Masechta. In other words, it's all based on Prakim, it's all based on chapters in the Masechta. So you have, and it's true by every Seder. So in the beginning of a Seder, you'll have the larger Masechtas, and then afterwards, you'll have the smaller Masechtas. You'll come back at me with Nezikin. That's not true by Nezikin, right? Because the Bavas, each one of them are 10 Prakim, and then it's followed by Sanhedrin, and Sanhedrin is 11 Prakim. So then my response to you is that the Bavas are not three Masechtas. The Bavas are one Masechta. Just happens to be that 30 Prakim was a very large Masechta. So they broke it down into bite-sized portions where they broke it up into three Bavas, three gates. Bava Kama, Mitzvah, and Basra, each one of them having 10 Prakim. So I'm telling you, it's and this was told to me by Rabbi Kornfeld, which, by the way, in general, if you have not seen his website, I highly encourage it, dafyomi.co.il. He has the entire Shas resourced over there. He is a treasure, and his all the research that he does is fantastic. I highly recommend it. But anyway, so he told me this, and so it is it's a Rebbe of mine back in the day. So so he told me this, and it's absolutely correct. It's absolutely true. So so we are right now in the fifth Masechta of the Seder. So far in Seder Kachim, we have done Zvachim Menachos Chulin, and we just finished Bechoros, and now we're on to Erchin. Now Erchin is a quote unquote short Masechta, but again, those are the Dapim talking. Don't let the Dapim fool you. It's not a short Masechta. It is short in terms of numbers. Meaning, in terms of the actual dapim is concerned, so it is 33 dapim. Sorry, 34 dapim. But in terms of prakim, so it's 9 prakim. So it's the same size as Bechoros. So okay, when it's a tie, by the way, then I don't know what becomes the determinant of which comes in front of what. But okay, anyway. But it's 9 prakim. So it's a lot of prakim tucked into not that many dapim. Which, by the way, if you do the math, you'll figure out that these prakim are going to go real quickly, meaning the 9 prakim over 34 blot. Okay, that's it's not a lot of pages per right, somewhere around 4 pages per perek. Anyway, okay, that's where we are. And in terms of the rest of Shas is concerned, and the Siyum is coming, so yeah, it's worthwhile to mention it now. So after Erchin, so we have a number of quote-unquote smaller Masechtas coming up in Seder Kachim, Temura, Krisus, Me'ila. We're going to be doing Masechtas at the end of Seder Kachim that are just Mishnayos. Now, that is unusual. That doesn't happen outside of Seder Kachim. But my guess is that when they designed to do the Daf Yomi, as long as they were doing most of Seder Kachim, so then they decided to do the Mishnayos as well. We're going to be covering all of Seder Kachim in the Daf Yomi, even those Masechtas that have no Gemara, even those Masechtas that just have Mishnayos. We're going to be doing, at the end of Seder Kachim, we're going to be doing a Masechta called Midos. And we're also going to be doing Kinim. And these have nothing, there's no Gemara, it's just Mishnayos. Okay, fine. After that, so then we are 2 months shy of the Siyum HaShas, and we only have one Masechta left to do, and that is Nida. Meaning in Seder Tahara, so we cover none of the Masechtas and Taharas, barring one. We only cover one of the Masechtas, that's Masechta Nida, and that's because it has Talmud Bavli, it has Gemara on it. The other Masechtas do not have any Gemara on it, and therefore it's not incorporated, it's not included in the Siyum HaShas, which we've noted already numerous times. And that's it. And then we start again. So sometime the beginning of January, January 4th, I think. So we start Shas another time, Emir Tzashem, by all of us. Okay, Erchin, So now that we took the big picture, let's just go now to our Masechta. Our Masechta is Masechta Erchin, and what is Erchin about? So first of all, in terms of pronunciation, so I'm going to keep saying Erchin. That's the way I've heard it. That's the way I'll say it over. It's probably mispronounced, probably better pronounced Arachin, but as long as I have a Masorah, I'll keep the Masorah. So, but anyway, with mispronunciation and everything. Mistakes are my own, by the way. I take full ownership of my own mistakes. But in terms of pronunciation, it is how it's said over by Merabim, and fine. Anyway, Erchin is another instrument in terms of how to donate to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, how to give money to the Beis HaMikdash? So, right, I say this with no cynicism nor any kind of humor intended. Meaning, shuls have many ways in which they fundraise. And yeah, you got to be a little bit creative in terms of fundraising. And so when giving money to the Beis HaMikdash, so there are different instruments in terms of how to give the money. Now, the Torah is not doing it for the sake of creativity, obviously, meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need to be some sort of master marketer in terms of how to make money, how to raise money for the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, every one of them has their own perspective and has their own design. And so, but there are different ways of giving money. There are different revenue streams, if you will, that go to the Beis HaMikdash. And Erchin is an instrument. It's a way of giving money to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what is an Erech? So I'm going to keep explaining it as a value. It's not a value in terms of a market value, but in other words, it's a fixed value that's given the Torah. So if I give somebody's Erech, I dedicate somebody's Erech, I could dedicate my own Erech to the Beis HaMikdash, or somebody else's Erech. So how much money am I on the hook for in order to give to the Beis HaMikdash? What is going to be the value of that person? So again, we're not talking about market value, although that is a way of giving money to the Beis HaMikdash. We're talking right now simply about his Erech value, or her Erech value. So to find this, you open up a Chumash, you open up to Parshas Bechukosai, and immediately after the Tochacha in Parshas Bechukosai, in the beginning of Perichav Zion, so there you will see the schedule. The Torah gives a menu of how much you have to give based on, and there are two factors that go into consideration. One is the person's age, and two is gender. And so you read through the Pesukim, and you're going to see exactly how much you're going to have to give under the circumstances when you dedicate somebody's Erech. Fine, there are different age brackets, there's going to be different amounts, and we're going to be covering that later in the Masechta, meaning the details are coming up later. You know how these Masechtas work, right? The actual details come up towards the end of the Masechta, and right now we are dealing more with just some of the larger ideas that revolve around Erchin. So I'm not going to go through the Parsha right now. I'm telling you where to find it. That is the basic idea behind Erchin. With that in mind, so we can now start our Mishnah. Hakol ma'arichim v'ne'arachim. The Mishnah starts off as follows, that everybody is ma'arich and ne'arach. Now, if you know your grammar, you know that ma'arich is the person who is dedicating or donating the money. So that's the ma'arich. The ne'arach, that's the nifal. That's the object. That's the person who's being dedicated. And so that means as follows, that when the Mishnah says that hakol ma'arichim, that means that anyone can make a Erech donation to the Beis HaMikdash. And Hakol Ne'erach, and everyone can be the subject of an Erech donation to the Beis HaMikdash. So who's included in this list when the Mishnah says Hakol? So we go back all the way to the beginning of Chulin, and you remember the Mishnah starts over there with the words Hakol Shochtin. And the word Hakol is there to tell us that it's a big umbrella. It's really broad. Meaning, even people who you might have thought should not be included in Erechin are in fact included in Erchin. Now, it doesn't mean everybody. I know Hakol means everybody, but of course it does not mean everybody, because there are going to be exceptions and people who are not included. But nevertheless, though, Hakol is there to tell us that it includes more than what you would have thought. So Hakol Ma'arichim and Erachim, so everybody can make an Erech donation. Everyone can be the subject of an Erech donation. Nojim v'nidarim. So Nojim v'nidarim is making a neder, making a vow. And in this context, we're talking about making a neder towards the Beis HaMikdash. And what's the difference between Erchin and Nedarim? In this context, in our Mishnah, it means that when I say Neder, I'm making a vow that I'm going to give the person's value. But here we're talking about market value. So when I say, when the Mishnah here is talking about Noder making the Neder, that's the one who's committing himself to give said person's market value to the Beis HaMikdash. When the Mishnah then goes on to say Nidar, so that again, that's Nifal. So that means that's the subject. That means you're, I'm sorry, that's the object. meaning you are now going to be the person whose value is going to be given to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if somebody wants to give my dhamma, my value to the Beis HaMikdash, so how does that work? So we figure out what my market value is. Right? You look at basically how much I would fetch for on the open market. Right? Obviously, I'm not, right? We're not slaves, but in terms of figuring out people's market value, so we treat them as if they were a slave, and we figure out how much they would go for on the market value, and that's how much you're going to be on the hook for. So just like everybody can be marich and nerach, so too everyone can be noder and nidar. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, and who is included? Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, Nashim, v'Avadim, Tumtum, v'Andraganas, Nodrim, v'Nidarim, u'marichin. So the list of Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, which the Gemara later on is going to comment, meaning, of course, meaning, why would I have thought otherwise? So Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, and Nashim, and women, and Avadim, slaves, presumably we're talking about Nevekanani, and Tumtum, and Androgynous. So those are people whose gender is not clear. Tumtum, the genitalia is covered. Androgynous, they demonstrate both genitalia, male and female. So they can all be no devinidar. So they're all included in the parsha of both making a neder and assessing somebody else's value, or even if they are become the object of a neder, that would be fine as well. Because every one of them has a market value, right? And the Gemara is going to discuss, there are people who have no market value. It's sad. We're going to see it later on. Meaning people who are just in such poor physical state that they simply don't have a market value. But we're talking about people who, for the most part, are healthy. So they're going to have a market value. So nojim v'nidarim, so they can make a neder, they can become the object of a neder. Ma'arichin, they can make an erech donation to the Beis HaMikdash. Aval lo ne'erachin. However, they can't be the object of an erchin donation. Why not? And the Mishnah goes on to explain, she'ena ne'erach ela hazachar v'adai nekeva v'adayis. Because in order to become the object of an erech value, so you have to be either definitively male or definitively female. Right? As I'm already open to the Chumash in Perek Chav Zayin, so the Torah goes on to describe that there are two factors that are going to determine your erech value. One is age and the other is gender. And so if a person is gender confused or gender unknown, and I'm not talking in the modern sense, I'm talking about in terms of just simple biology. In other words, either genitalia is covered or both male and female are present. So under those circumstances, that person is not subject to an erech value simply because for the parsha of erech, it's either definitively male or definitively female. Cherishot v'katan, nidar v'ne'erachin. As it relates to a cherishot v'katan, cherish is a deaf mute, shote, someone who's mentally deranged, katan is a minor. Nidarin v'ne'erachin. So they can become the object of either neder or an erech vow, avalo nodrin velo marichin, but they can't make the neder and they can't make an erech donation simply because they're not old enough. And because they're not old enough, well, that only explains the minor. Mimnei she'in behem das. The Mishnah explains that for all three, they don't have the requisite knowledge. Meaning, in order to make a neder, so you have to be a ben das, you have to be somebody with a mental, basic mental cognition, and so therefore we assume that all these people do not, and so therefore they can't be the ones making these kinds of obligations upon themselves, but certainly they can become the object of. So that means to say that if I want to give a child's erech, so I can do that. In other words, I can point to a child. Is there a point where the child does not have an erech because he's so young? Sure. And the pasuk says, "Nimim bechorish ve'ad ben chameishanim." The first option in terms of an age is from 1 month until 5 years. So that means to say, anything below 1 month is too young. But we're going to get to that a little bit later on. When we're talking about katanim, we just simply mean anyone who is a month and above. Okay. Ad kan divrei Mishnah. That's the Mishnah. Just one point before we go on to the Gemara. It says that women and avadim can make an erech donation or can make a neder donation to the Beis HaMikdash. And how exactly do they have money? So Rashi over here writes, Nashim v'avadim u'misham l'nachar zman kishnizgar sha'isha o'nishtachar ha'evin. So when a woman is married, so financially she's locked. Meaning, remember, her nichse malug is right now going to be operated by her husband. And her nichse tzon barzel also is going to be operated by her husband. And any money that comes into the... Any money that she earns also is going to be handled by her husband. So she, while married, she doesn't have money. So Rashi says that's fine. So in other words, it's an obligation. If she makes such a neder, so the neder is going to be binding. If she makes an erech pledge, that too is going to be binding. And the obligation will just simply wait until she has money. Either she's going to be widowed or she'll be divorced, but the obligation will just latently be there until she's able to have money. The other possibility, says Rashi, or Nishachara Evan. Now, what about an Evan? Same story with an Evan. Not same story, but actually when it comes to money, Mashkana Evan Kana Ravo. Meaning everything immediately goes to the owner. The Evan doesn't have a kinyan. So how is he going to be able to make these kinds of pledges? So Rashi, same thing. Rashi says that when he makes a pledge, the pledge is going to be binding, but right now it's going to be latent. In other words, and when he gets freed, then he's going to be obligated. Tosos, by the way, over here, offers other solutions in terms of how it would be possible for either the wife or the Eved to be able to make good on their actual pledge. I see the second Tosos for other possibilities as well. Okay.
Can the husband be Mayfair?
Can the husband be Mayfair? Interesting question. So by Neder, the yes. And by an Erech, I don't know. Okay. Good. A Cheresh, by the way, having a market value. One other point before we move on to the Gemara. You look at the fourth Tosus on the Amud. Fourth Tosus on the Amud is bothered because we said by Cheresh Ot V'Katan, they could become the object of a Neder. Now, the object of a Neder, that assumes that the Cheresh has any kind of market value. If you look at Baba Kama in the 8th Perek, Tosfos points out, it sounds like that there is no market value for a cheresh, right? You make somebody a cheresh, right? The 8th Perek of Baba Kama is dedicated to the topic of bodily damage. And a person hurts another person to the point where he becomes a cheresh. So the victim now goes from what to what in terms of his market value. So he went from having full market value, says the Gemara over there, to having zero market value. So that means to say that you have to make full compensation on his full market value. So that means the assumption over there in the Gemara in Baba Kama is that a Cheresh has no value. And meanwhile, over here, our Gemara says that a Cheresh can become an object of a Neder. So that obviously is a bit troubling, how to understand these two Gemaras. So see the fourth Tosos where he addresses that question. It's a short Tosos. And he tries to offer some sort of resolution between the two. All right, we are starting with the Gemara. We are on Beis Amud Aleph. And after just finishing the Mishnah, the Gemara begins. Hakol Ma'arich and Lasui Emai. So when it comes to being Ma'arich, so the Hakol. Meaning, like we said in the beginning of Masechet Chulin, remember the beginning of Masechet Chulin, we spent roughly three blot of Gemara explaining what the Hakol is coming to include. Right? Everybody can check. Who's everybody? Who's included in the umbrella of everybody? So the Gemara over there spent a lot of real estate. A lot. Going over who is included. So we're going to do something similar here in our Masechta as well. These next three blot of Gemara, today's included, is going to be 2.5 blot of Gemara. No. I like my first response better. The next three blot of Gemara is really going to be dedicated to understanding what the Hakol is coming to include. But you'll see that we're not going to be just limited to Erechin. We're going to be bouncing around a lot over the course of today and tomorrow. Everybody enjoy the ride. We're going to be covering a lot of different topics throughout Shas in our understanding of who is included in the word Hakol. So as it relates to Hakol Ma'arichin, so everybody can be Ma'arich. So Ma'arich means the one who's making the pledge. Lasui Mai, who's that coming to include? Lasui Mufla Samachlish. So it's coming to include somebody who's not yet an adult, but shows that he has basic cognitive ability. Take a look at the first Rashi on the Gemara. Rashi writes, Ben Yubei Shana, V'yom Echash, U'samach Le'ish. So for a boy, we're talking about a boy who has just got to his 12th birthday. Right? Rashi always writes, Ben Yubei Shana, V'yom Echad. That's the actual birthday itself. Meaning Yubei Shana is when he completes. And then the Yom Echad means now he's on the next day, which here in our parlance means he's actually on the birthday itself. So he hit his 12th birthday. Shu Samach Leish, now he is actually really close to being a man, 1 year away. Ve'eno ish ad yavishtei sa'aros shtei sa'aros. Now in terms of when adulthood comes about, so we say throughout Shas, we're going to be spending some time in Masechta Nida going over this point, and that is you have to be 13 years of age, and you also have to have physical maturation signs. Rashi goes on to say, mufla karile al shem. So now we're describing this basically, he's 1 year away from his bar mitzvah, and he's called the mufla. What does the word mufla mean? So that's what Rashi is focusing on. Umufla karile al shem shebotkinoso im yodel haflos ulefaresh. Throughout Shas, the word lahafli means to be able to articulate and to be able to clarify. And so, at 12 years of age, so basically, it is the old version, so to say, of the IQ test. And you just it's not really a test. It's just basically, does he have basic cognitive abilities? Can he articulate? Can he clarify? L'shemida neder l'shemi hikdish, meaning, oh, you want to make a neder, okay? And what is the heck? What is the neder going to go towards? What's the money going to go towards? You want to be makdish. Same thing. What is that going to go towards? And Rashi over here sends us to the Gemara Nida, and we're going to get to it in about 6 months from now. In Masech Nida, we're going to be going over this idea of maturity, physical maturity, mental maturity, and we're going to be talking about at what point in time adulthood comes about. What we're saying over here is as follows, is that generally speaking, a child does not make the jump from being a katan to a gadol at bar mitzvah. That's correct. And by the way, for a girl, same thing. But 1 year earlier at bas mitzvah, 12 years of age, all that's correct. But when it comes to making a neder or an erech or any kind of donation, if 1 year prior to their bar mitzvah or 1 year prior to her bas mitzvah, she has the cognitive ability where she understands what's happening, she understands the basics of money and where this money is going towards, so then under those circumstances, so then their pledge is in fact going to be binding. And that's what the Hakol of our Mishnah is coming to include. That's Mufla Samachlish.
This is for girls Na'ara or this is pre-Na'ara?
No, this would be pre. In other words, Na'ara is after 12. Right? Na'ara is, for a girl, it is three developmental stages. It's Katana, Na'ara, Bogeres, but Na'ara, she's an adult. Na'ara is at 12. That extends for half a year, for at 12 and a half. 12 and a half, typically, that's not an absolute, but at 12 and a half, now she becomes a Bogeres. Okay, but in other words, this is already pre-Na'ara. This is while she's a Katana. Who's going to have to pay? Right? That's a good question. Presumably, they're going to have to pay. Ne'erach l'asuyemai. So now, as far as ne'erach is concerned, so who's the Mishnah coming to include when the Mishnah says that there are going to be the object of a ne'erach? So if it's just a standard person, obviously. So the ne'erach, the hakol, and Rashi points this out, by the way, it's very clear from the Gemara, that the understanding is that when the Mishnah uses the word hakol, the Mishnah only says it one time. But the understanding of the Gemara is that goes on every one of the action points of the Mishnah, meaning the way the Gemara is basically reading the Mishnah, Hakol Marichin, Hakol Ne'erachin, Hakol Nodrin, Hakol Nidarin, so the Hakol is going in every one. So now we're up to the Ne'erachin. What is that coming to include? Lasuyim Ay, Lasuyim Menuval, Mukashchin. So it's coming to include someone who is either Menuval, Mukashchin, somebody who's so physically deteriorated. Menuval just simply means disgusting, Mukashchin. So he's got some sort of skin condition, but a really serious skin condition. So under these circumstances, what would the hava mean that they don't have an erech? Now remember, for an erech, the English translation is value, but in our context, it's a poor translation. Erech just simply means that, right, there's an assessment of that person based on gender and age. So regardless of his current physical condition, what doesn't make a difference? In other words, as long as he has an age, and everyone alive does, and as long as he has a gender, and most people do, so as long as they have one of those, I'm sorry, as long as they have both of those factors, so that's it, they have an erech, period. So why does the Gemara is saying, oh, but the menuva mukashchin, so they're included in ne'erachim. Why would I thought they're not included? So the Gemara explains the havamina. The havamina would be that you would think that when the Torah introduces us to erech, the Torah does use the word neder as well, so maybe there would have been some sort of correlation. That the only time a person has an erech is when he has a damim, when he has a market value. But if he doesn't have a market value, I might have thought he doesn't have an erech. That's the havamina. And what the Mishnah is coming to teach us is that no, they are two different instruments, they're two different vehicles. When it comes to the erech, it is solely going to be based on age and gender, and that's it. Damim obviously is based on his market value, but the two are not connected. They do not correlate one with the other.
Masorah doesn't have any value in terms of damim.
No,
Masorah. Somebody who's Masorah.
Oh, someone who has Saras.
Right.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know.
No value, but they have erech.
It's a fair question. I don't know. Nefashos, kol dehu. So I'm sorry, kamash malan, nefashos, kol dehu. And the chiddush is that no. And the reason why the Gemara says we know it's not the case is because the Torah used the words nefashos. So nefashos means that the nefesh is intact, and then you have a gender, and then you have an Asian. That's it. They're included in Erechin. Okay, Nodrin. We're up to the next one of the Mishnah. So we explain Ma'arichin, Muflas HaMachlish. We explain Na'arachin, and that's going to be Menuvah Mukashchin. Now we're up to Nodrin, who can make a Neder. Lasui Amai. So Nidarin Yitzrichlei. So the Gemara says, you're right. Nodrin already at this point in time, we basically have it covered. Meaning you have to have cognitive ability, but we've already established that. So you're right. So the Nodrin doesn't give us a Chiddush, but it sets us up for the next one, Nidarin. Nidarin means anyone can be the object of a neder. Now we say anybody. Again, we know it doesn't include everybody, but it is more inclusive. Who's being included? So Nidarin lasui amai lasui tumtum vajraganos behejik tani lahu. So the Gemara says, you want to tell me that it includes a tumtum androgynous, which would be a good Chiddush, but it's already included in the Mishnah. The Mishnah makes exactly that point. So we can't tease out a Chiddush from the word hakol when the Mishnah says it straight out. And the same thing could be said about Chereshot Vekata, meaning also would have been a wonderful Chiddush. But the Mishnah actually addresses it, and the Mishnah says it. So we're not teasing it out from the word hakol. And maybe it's coming to include somebody who's under a month. That too is going to be articulated in an upcoming Mishnah. So again, no. What about a non-Jew? That's also coming up later in the Mishnayos. So we don't need to tease that out as well. So the Gemara says, okay, look, here's what we're going to have to say. Meaning, even though the Mishnayos do articulate a lot of these cases where they are included in a nidar, in becoming the object of a neder, what you're going to have to say is that the Mishnah alludes to it now, when the Mishnah says hakol nidarim, and then hadar mefarish, and then later on it goes and spells it out. But when the Mishnah originally made the statement of hakol nidarim, it included these people who you might have thought were not included, and on top of that, the Mishnah also spells it out later on as well. Okay, and what a great launching pad. So now that we have explained in our Mishnah the hakol going on, ma'arichin, ne'arachin, nojim v'nidarim. So now, from this point going forward, now the Gemara uses this as an opportunity to go ahead and spell out. We have other hakols mentioned throughout Mishnayos, and we're not going to limit ourselves to Mishnayos. Brisos as well. And so when we see the word hakol, so we now understand that the hakol is inclusive. It means that other people who I might have thought should not be included are in fact included. And so the only question left to ascertain is who else is being included. So here we go. So we are now going to move, and we're going to do this a lot over the course of today and tomorrow. We're going to move topics. Hakol Somchin, everyone is able to do the mitzvah of smicha. When you and I were to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, so we have as one of the mitzvahs of the carbon, the owner takes his hand, puts his hands and weighs them and leans them against the head of the animal, and this is the mitzvah of smicha. Smicha is done immediately before shechting the animal, and then if it's a carbon that's there to provide a kapara, so then together with the smicha, so you do vidui. You do a confession over the animal while you're resting on the animal. And just in terms of simple svar, in terms of simple understanding of the mitzvah, so you understand that the carbon is being brought in lieu of you, meaning you should have been, quote-unquote, sacrificed. So what you're doing is you're transferring it over to the carbon. Again, kipshuto. But obviously you can also understand it from a basic level in terms of your own psyche and self-improvement in terms of helping yourself after becoming aware of what you've done. So hakol somchin lasui amai, what is it coming to include? Lasui yorish. So what is it coming to include when it says everybody does smicha? Is that even someone who inherits a karban? So let's say the father set aside a karban, and Rachmanos, the father died before having offered the karban. So who is now considered the owner of the karban? The karban now is part of the Yerusha, it's part of the estate. So the son, now this is a point of controversy, but there is an opinion that says that the son now becomes not only the owner of the estate, that's not controversial, that part's clear, but also becomes the owner of the carbon as well, and the son can now take the place of the father and stand in lieu of the father in order to do the mitzvah of smicha. So when the mitzvah says hakol somchin, it's coming to include even the yorish as well. Now the Gemara notes, not everybody agrees to this, the Dilok Rabbi Yehuda, and not according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. As we will see momentarily, Rabbi Yehuda does not allow for the yorish to do smicha. Hakol mamirim lasuye. Now in terms of affecting temura. Now, affecting temura, so that is going to be our next mesechta. Now, temura is to take a carbon and attempt to exchange it to another animal. First and foremost, don't do it, right? The Torah says not to do it. And if you attempt to do it, so it will be successful. So, Vayahu Usmurasa Yekodesh. The original animal and the secondary animal are both going to have Kedusha. And the beginning of Masechta Tumura, we're going to be asking the very simple question. If the Torah says not to do it, so how can it be effective? That is going to be the first discussion that we're going to have in Masechta Tumura. In the meantime, however, the Mishnah says, Hakol Memirim, everyone can affect Tumura. So what is that coming to include? Lasu Yimai, Lasu Yorish. So that too also is including the Yorish as well. Meaning that the Yorish, the inheritor, is going to be a stand-in on the father. So everything the father could have done with the Karban, Yorish could do with the Karban as well. Udalok Rav Yehuda, Detanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Yorish Shomech, Yorish Meimer. Rav Yehuda, Amar Yorish, Eino Shomech, Yorish, Eino Meimer. So we have a machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda on both of these points. The Tanakam says that a Yorish can do smicha, and not only can do smicha, but mitzvah to do so. A Yorish can do Tamura, shouldn't of, but can do it. And Rav Yehuda on both of these points says no, that the Yorish does not stand in the place of the father. My time to Rav Yehuda, and the Gemara now is just going to go over the basics of how does each one arrive at their conclusion based on the Pesukim and Drashas. So what is the basis of Rav Yehuda? Karban Avo, lo Karban Aviv. So it says in the Pasuk Karbano. Karbano is possessive. It's his Karban, meaning he has to do this meaning Smicha, with his Karban. So Karban Avo, lo Karban Aviv, and not the Karban of his father. Now that Pasuk is in relation to doing Smicha. And what we're going to do is we're going to learn out the Tchilas of Hektish from Sof Hektish. Smicha is considered Sof Hektish. Why? So Rashi explains, because Smicha is done at the end of the process. Right before you shecht it. Shechting is the end. Yes, of course, there's Rikas Adam. But in terms of the animal's concern, so Shechita is the end of the Karban. So now, what immediately before Shechita is Smicha. So Smicha is also considered the end. So that's what's called Sof Hektish. So if Sof Hektish is going to be only the father and not the Yoresh, so the same thing is true with Tchilas Hektish. What's Tchilas Hektish in our context? Tchilas Hektish is Tamura, because what happens in Tamura? You're generating a new Karban. So this is what's called in Halacha Tchilas Hektish. So just like by Sof Hektish, it's the father, not the Yoresh. Same thing is true with Tchilas Hektish with Tamura as well. Masof Hektish Yoresh Eino Somech, Af Tchilas Hektish Yoresh Eino Meimer. Good. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda based on the Pasuk Karbano. Wait just 1 second. V'rabanan Hamer Yamir L'Rabbas Es Yoresh. So as far as the Chachamim are concerned, they're going to start from Tamura. Now in Tamura, the Pasuk says Hamer Yamir, which means the double language, more people can do Tamura than you thought. Who is that coming to include? The Yoresh. Now V'yalsim V'yalfin and Sof Hektish Mitzchilas Hektish. Now here, once we start in Tamura and once we include the Yoresh, now we just get to go in the other direction. So if the Yoresh can do Tamura, the Yoresh can also do Smicha. Matrilas Hektish Yoresh Meimer, Av Sof Hektish Yoresh Somech. Now, we are going to go in our classic ping pong, where we are now see how the Rabbi Yehuda darshins, we see how the Chachamim darshin, and what is each position going to do with the other position. V'rabbanan hai Karbano mai Avdilei. So what are the Chachamim going to do with Karbano? So mi bailei Karbano v'lo Karbano v'kochavim. Now, as Rashi points out over here, it says Karbano 3 times in the Parsha regarding Smicha. So 3 times the Torah says, your Karban. And we're going to darshan the possessive all 3 times. How do we darshan it? The Gemara goes on to explain. Karbano v'lo Karbano v'kochavim. 1. Your Karban to the exclusion of a non-Jew's Karban. A non-Jew is allowed to bring a Karban, but there's no Smicha. 2. Karbano v'lo Karban chavero. Your Karban, but not your friend's Karban. You can only do Smicha on your very own Karban. And 3, Karbano, the rabbi is called Balei Chovrim L'Smicha. And Karbano tells us that anyone who has ownership in the Karban can do Smicha, not can do Smicha, but should and must do Smicha. So that means to say that, let's say you have a group bringing a Karban. A Karban can be brought by a group. If you remember, we said that when it comes to Mincha can only be brought by a single ownership, by a single owner. But when you have a carbon can be brought by a partnership. A partnership can bring carbonos. So let's say you have 5 people owning a carbon, right? Each one of them having shares in the carbon. So now the carbono, as long as you have ownership in the carbon, so you're obligated to do smicha. Each one of them. That's what we learn from carbono. Good. So that is how the Chachamim darshan, the 3 carbonos of the Torah. And so obviously now Yorish is not one of them. Perfect. Meaning, according to the Chachamim, it's because a Yorish, the Yorish is in fact included in doing Smicha. Meaning, for the Chachamim, Karbano does not exclude the Yorish. Now we go back to Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda l'rabo is called Balei Chovrim l'smicha leislei. So the Gemara says, now as far as Reb Yehuda is concerned, so either, the Gemara offers a couple possibilities. One, Reb Yehuda doesn't agree with this idea that every one of the partners is going to be doing smicha. Meaning, according to Reb Yehuda, one of the partners will do smicha, and he'll do it for the others. But he doesn't darshan the word karbano, the third karbano, yeah, which frees that up for him. And so that means to say now that it's open up for the Yorish.
So one of them would confess the sin of the others?
Exactly how it works, I'm not sure, but that's one possibility.
In terms of rabbein,
Let me just first finish the back and forth, and then I'll pause. The Nami Islay, the Gemara says, or the other possibility is that he agrees that every one of the partners is going to be doing smicha, and ove kocham v'chavero mechad kran nafke. And now it's just a question of accounting, meaning that the non-Jew and the chavero are both going to be learned out from one of the drashas, because thematically it's the same basic idea. It's that it's not your karban, meaning it has to be something, a karban owned by a Jew, and meaning and by you. So since we can learn out both halachas from one drasha, so now that basically frees up one of the karbanos. So yasalu trei, that leaves us two. Chad karbanov lo karbanaviv. Ve'idach l'rab is called balei chovrim l'smicha. And so now that we have two available drashas, one is going to be the father, not the yorish, and two is going to be that every partner has to do smicha. V'rav Yehuda. And now that we addressed how we darshan the karbano, now what are we going to do with the hamer yamir? So we go there. Rav Yehuda, hi, Hamer Yamir, my Avile. What did they do with the drush of Hamer Yamir? So, Mibayla, the Rabbah, says Aisha. So, it comes to include women. Women can do Tamura. Now, again, when I say can do Tamura, I keep repeating because it's correct. In other words, shouldn't. Just like a man shouldn't do Tamura, a woman shouldn't do Tamura, but if she does, it's effective. Detanya, and the Gemara points out, Lefisha calling Yanam Adabir Belashon Zachar. You know, the parsha of Tamura is in the male. Now, Tosfos over here points out, so is most of Kol HaTorah Kula in the masculine. And meanwhile, we know that if it's a law in the Torah, it applies to men and women as well. So why over here would I have thought any differently over here? See Tosfos for a quick discussion on that. But Ela B'Lashon Zachar, Ma'asof in L'Rabbos is the Isha. So how do I know the woman is included in Tamura as well? Tamalamar V'im Hamer Yamir. So we learn it out from the extra language Hamer Yamir. So that is what is being included in the double lashon, v'rabbanim mevi'im, and the chachamim say we agree that there has to be a specific drush including women, but it comes out from the word v'im. Rav Yehuda v'im lo darish, and Rav Yehuda doesn't darsh on the word v'im. He does not feel that another drusha can come out from the word v'im. And so what the Gemara has classically done is basically, how is Rav Yehuda and the chachamim? We know what their positions are. How do they derive these positions from the various psukim? And so we went to Karbano by Smicha, the three Karbanos by Smicha. How's Rav Yehuda going to darshan it? How are the Chachamim going to darshan it? And then we went to Hamer Yamir by Tamura. How's Rav Yehuda going to darshan it? How are the Chachamim going to darshan it?
So the Rabbanan said that by this, including the Yoresh, can do Smicha, or should do Smicha. But how would the Yoresh know what the father's confession would have been?
It would be a little more generic.
Like what? Like my father, whatever sin he did,
yeah,
he would ask for himself or for his father.
No,
whatever my father's sin was.
In other words, we're just talking about, you're focused on the vidu, which is good, but we're really talking about the physical act of smicha.
But the Yorish can't do
that. That include confession.
Okay, so yes, most of the time, yes. Here, no.
But the Yorish cannot do carbon chata.
What's semicha? Whatever semicha idea of this.
No, if the father had something in mind, right, by carbon ola, for example, so it's mechaper. Just 1 second. So it's mechaper and aseh. It's mechaper and positive commandment. So the father has something in mind. The son may not know what the father had in mind, but he'll still do the act of semicha.
But no confession?
Yeah. If he doesn't know what the father's thinking, so that's fine.
So just put hands and saying anything.
Yeah.
So in terms of the other way. For Yoresh, he basically owns everything after the father passes. Why? He can do Temura. There shouldn't be no problem. It's his.
A carbon doesn't work exactly that way. Meaning the carbon, he did inherit the carbon, but the carbon is not under his ownership. Meaning the father has a certain associative attachment to the carbon. The carbon, remember, the carbon now belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. The father already designated the carbon. Uh-huh. And now the carbon goes to the child's estate. So from the child's standpoint, it's, he's now, he's a custodian of the carbon, but it's not his carbon. Okay. We are now on Beis Amud Beis. We're at the two dots of Kol Chayavim B'Sukkah. Change topics, right? We're going to do a lot of that. Okay, transition to a new topic. Kol Chayavim B'Karban. Everyone, I'm sorry, Kol Chayavim B'Sukkah. Lasuei Mai. So the Mishnah tells us that everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of Sukkah. So who is that coming to include? Now the mitzvah of Sukkah, by the way, is the mitzvah that says Man Grama. It's a time by mitzvah, which means that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Sukkah. Certainly, they can option into the mitzvah doing the mitzvah. But they don't have an obligation to do so. So over here, we're not coming to include women. So who's being included? So we're talking about a child once he no longer needs his mother. Did not, which nowadays is about 34, right, roughly. So the, give or take. So a child who no longer needs his mother, so obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, obviously, the Gemara over here is making reference to the mitzvah of chinuch, meaning that when we're talking about an obligation, we're not talking about a Torah obligation, but still. In other words, the mitzvah of chinuch demands that at a certain developmental point, when the child has some basic understanding, so he's obligated to be trained in doing mitzvahs. So with that stated, our Gemara is darshing the hakol, that everybody's included, even this child. Remember the Gemara in the beginning of Sukkah. Hiloni Amalka, she made a Sukkah. Mm-hmm. She had seven children. One of them had to be about 7 years of age. And the Gemara over there professes that that from a chinuch standpoint, so the Sukkah had to be kosher Sukkah, right? That was the very short version of a longer discussion regarding Hiloni Amalka. Anyway, Akol Chayav Belulav. Next, the Mishnah tells us, by the way, I say Mishnah, it could be a Mishnah, it could be a Brisa's. Right, I'm sorry for not being super, super accurate. But anyway, Hakol Chayim Lulav, everyone's obligated. Lulav Lasui Mai Lasui Katan Hayodela Naneya. So here, in terms of the mitzvah of chinuch regarding lulav, so it's not enough for the child to be able to hold a lulav, but to be able to hold a lulav and know how to properly know na'anuin. I say properly know how to know na'anuin. If you're ever in shul and you look up from time to time and see people doing na'anuin, so everybody's got, you know, everyone's got a little twist in terms of how they do na'anuin. But there's certain things which are basic in terms of na'anuin, and the child has to be developmentally ready enough in order to be able to do na'anuin. Ditnan katna yadela na'aneh chay belulav. The Mishnah over there in the third parak of Sukkah talks about when the katan is old enough where he understands how to do na'anuin, at that point in time, from a chinuch perspective, he knows how to he's obligated to do the mitzvah of lulav. Hakol chayav mitzvah lasui yamai lasui katna yadeli hisatev. When it comes to tzitzis, what is the action point that's necessary for tzitzis? It's ituf. It is wrapping yourself up in tzitzis. So when you put on the talus, so there is a manner in which ituf is done here too, by the way. I can make the same comment. People have different menhagim exactly how to do ituf, but wrapping yourself up in a talus does require a certain dexterity and a certain skill. And so when the child is old enough, when he can perform this, so then he's going to be chayev in tzitzis. Titanya, kana yodeli satev, chayev in tzitzis. So fine. So when the child is old enough where he's able to perform this kind of activity, he's going to be chayav in the mitzvah tzitzis. Hakol chayav mitzvilin asu yamai lasu inkani yodei lishmor tefillin. Now when it comes to tefillin, so what exactly is required for tefillin? So it's interesting. You could have made the argument that the kshira, the tying of the tefillin and the wrapping of the tefillin, so that requires a certain dexterity and a certain coordination. The Gemara over here is focusing on shmira, the idea that when you're wearing tefillin, so you have to be in a state, in a clean state. You have to be clean state of mind, clean state of body. So when the child is old enough where he can have the shmira, so then the father goes ahead and buys a pair of tefillin for his son. Bizmanenu, so we, generally speaking, we're not big on ketanim wearing tefillin. Meaning even though from the simple reading of the Gemara over here, right, our ketanim should be wearing tefillin by 10, 11 years of age, they certainly at that point in time can basically maintain themselves. But our minagiz is that, and again, various minhagim, right? A week, a month, right? What do you do?
Some sparring you have like 6 months before.
6 months, oh, okay. So the various minhagim in terms of when the chinuch is for tefillin, but the Gemara tells us it's from the time of Shmira. Hakol chayavim b'ri'iyah, the mitzvah of ri'iyah, being olah l'regel, going up to the base of Mikdash, and not just going up to the base of Mikdash, but going up with a karban. Now, who is that coming to include? So we're going to leave the world of children, and now we're going to enter into the world of someone who is half an Evan, half Ben Chorin. How does a person become a half slave, right? That's unusual. But the case that's always illustrated is where, let's say, a person was owned by a partnership group. The group was made up of two people. And one of the partners decided to free the Evan Kanani. And so now you have this Evan Kanani running around in a very unusual state where he's half free and half slave. Now, He is, right. Literally split personality. So for this chatzi after chatzi ben chorin. So according to the Gemara is assuming right now that I could have made an argument that he's not chayev in the mitzvah of Alila Regal. Now why wouldn't he be chayev? So Rashi over here points out. An Eved Gamor, somebody who's definitely of an Eved Kanani, is going to be exempt from Re'iya. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Rashi quotes the Pasuk, Es Penei Ha'adon Hashem. So Misha Ein Lo Adon Elohu. So you have a mitzvah of Alila Rego when you have one master. An Eved Kanani obviously has multiple masters, and so therefore is going to be exempt. The full-fledged Eved is going to be exempt from Alila Rego. But now you have your Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin, so he's going to be obligated. Now, that's not by consensus. There are those who dispute, notably Ravina. Ravina says that a chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin is exempt from the mitzvah of Alila Regel. So how does he understand hakol? So the Gemara says, well, let's say the person is lame on day one. Lame meaning literally can't walk on day one. And then very full and quick recovery on day two, he was able to walk. So, if you are not ambulatory, so you do not have a mitzvah of Alila Regel, which, if you think about it, is the most literal understanding of Alila Regel, meaning Regel, meaning, I understand we translate as Yantiv, but it means Raglaim, it means get up and walk towards the base of Mikdash. So if you can't walk, so you have an exemption, you have a bona fide exemption. If this person can't walk on day one, but then on day two can walk, so the assumption now is that he's obligated. Now the Gemara says that's good, but it's based on the following analysis. Now the Gemara says, okay, but there are two different ways of how to look at not doing the mitzvah of Alila Regel on day one. Meaning if you don't do the mitzvah of Alila Regel on day one, you have all of Yantiv to do so. Right? Sukkot, you have all 7 days. Same thing with Pesach. Even Shavuos, which is a 1 day Yantiv, you have all 7 days. Right, that's called the Yemei Tashlumin. Okay, now, how to understand the Tashlumin, the Yemei Tashlumin? The Gemara gives us two possibilities. One is that really your obligation was day one. Well, let me go in the order of the Gemara. There is an obligation to be Ola L'Regel, to present yourself in the Azara with a Karban on any one of the days. Fine. So if you miss day one, so you have the second day. You have the third day. Fine. However, there's another way to understand the mitzvah. The mitzvah is day one. And what the Torah allows are, if you miss day one, make up days. So if you don't have, if you don't bring on day one, so then day two. And if you don't bring day two, so then day three. But it's all make up for day one. Now the Gemara says, okay, for our chigir, who was a chigir on day one, he was lame on day one, so now it really depends on how the analysis works. If he has an obligation for the entire week, so fine. So he was not available on day one with a legitimate exemption, but day two comes around and he is healed, fine. He'll do the mitzvah of Alila Regel. However, if it's all makeup for day one and he was exempt on day one, so then there's nothing to make up. He had a bona fide exemption. So then what are you going to say? So my lasu yesuma b'achas me'enav udelo ki'aitana. So the Gemara says, okay, so in terms of the hakol, so if it's not including our chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, because you subscribe to Ravina, if it's not including the person who was chiger b'yom echad, somebody lame on day one but recovered on day two, but you can't include that person because you subscribe to the idea that it's all make up for day one. So then there's a third possibility which the Gemara goes over, and that is the opinion of, the opinion that if you can see out of one eye, so then you will be chayv in the mitzvah of Alila Regel. The time we learned in the Braisa, Yochanan ben Davai, Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Summa Bachas Meinav, Patam and Ariya. Now this also is a point of controversy. There is a Tana who says that if you can only see out of one eye, you're going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Alila Regel. Shenemar Yera'eh. Now the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, and the Pasuk could be read either as you see or you will be seen. Just a question of how to the Kri versus the Ksiv, and the Kederach Sheba Leiraos, Kach Ba Leiraos. Ma Leiraos B'Shtei Einav, Af Leiraos B'Shtei Einav. Now, when you go to the base of Mikdash to be seen, the Re'iyah of Alil Arego, right, don't confuse, by the way, Re'iyah with an Aleph, meaning, right, to be seen. So that has to be done when you have the ability to see with both of your eyes, just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu sees with his two eyes. Now that's obviously anthropomorphic, but when the Torah describes, when the Torah does go through the anthropomorphic exercise of giving a Kadosh Baruch Hu human traits, the Torah uses the words enei. A Kadosh Baruch Hu has eyes, so to say, So therefore, so when a Kadosh Baruch Hu sees, he sees with two eyes. So too, when we are going to be seen in the Beis Hamikdash, we too have to be seen with the ability to see with both of our eyes. So that is a that's a possibility of Hadarshan. In fact, that's the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Da'avai in the name of Rav Yehuda. So if you subscribe to that viewpoint, so then the Hakol is not coming to include our person who can only see out of one eye. Masha Ein Kain, if you don't subscribe to that position, that's what the Hakol is coming to include. Now, another possibility that is really is talking about our half Evan, half free person. Now the Gemara says, now what bothered you? What bothered you is that Ravina doesn't subscribe to that Lokasha. It could very well be that there were two different stages of how the Chachamim viewed our Chatzi. Ditnan, and we quote the Mishnah. This Mishnah is quoted often. And we get to quote it again here in the beginning of Erchin. Let's say a person gets to this position of being half slave and half free. So Ovid is Rabbi Yomechad v'esatzma Yomechad divrei Beis Hillel. So Beis Hillel took an original position. An original position, as we're going to see in just a moment, he didn't finish with this position. And that is, okay, so in other words, so we'll split the work. One day I work for myself, and the next day I work for my master. Either 7 days a week, Shabbos he's off. So, right, so every other day for the 6 days of the week, so he'll work, he'll alternate between him and his master. Now, that's the opinion of Beis Hillel. Amar lem Beis Shammai. So Beis Shammai says, Tikantum es Rabbo. Vetz atzmo lo tikantum. So very good. So in other words, so that was great for the for the remaining owner. I mean, he benefited tremendously. But for this person who's working now, so in terms of employment, so Baruch Hashem, he's fine. Right? He's gainfully employed for both his master and for himself. However, who's he going to marry? So Lisa Shivcha ino yachol. So he cannot marry a Shivcha because half of him is free. And Baschorin ino yachol, Baschorin ino yachol, and he can't marry a Baschorin because half of him is a slave. So Yivatel. And now, so okay, so you'll tell the person not to get married. The Gemara says that's totally untenable. Lo nivra olam ela l'peri v'rivya. Right, one of the primary mission statements of the creation of this world is puravu, is to procreate. Shenemar lo sohu bara lo sheves yitzara. Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yeshayahu that the world was created for the purposes of occupation, of procreating and establishing humanity on this world. So ela mimnei tikun haolam kofen esrabah v'oso oso ben chorin. So for the purposes of tikkun olam, right? An interesting usage of the expression tikkun olam over here. It means it here in the most literal sense possible. Tikkun olam, meaning so that the person can now propagate. So for that reason alone, it is sufficient grounds now to tell the remaining owner, look, right, you have to free him. You don't have a choice in the matter. Kofin es rabbo v'ose oso ben chorin. You do for it. The kofin. You force him. V'kosev shtar al chasi damav. And what you're going to do is now you're going to be writing a writing up a document for half of his value, meaning so that if he can't pay right now, he will. He's going to have to pay. And so this is the opinion of Beit Shammai. And so now when Beit Hillel hears this position of Beit Shammai, v'chazim Beit Hillel haroz kedivrei Beit Shammai. So then Beit Hillel says, you know what? You're right. You're right. We're moving our position. We're changing our position. We're conceding. Your point is going to be a winning argument. And so therefore, that's what's called Mishnah Rishonah versus Mishnah Achronah. Mishnah Rishonah is the original position taken by Beis Hillel, and Mishnah Achronah is when Beis Hillel eventually capitulates to that of the position of Beis Shammai. And so under those circumstances, now, when you have a Chasi Eved Chasi Ben Chorin, because the Chachamim is going to now free him, and even if he's not currently freed, but because of the mandate that he's going to be freed, we treat him right now currently as a Ben Chorin, and so therefore Aliyah Larego is going to be Chayav in Aliyah Larego. Okay, let's do one more. Hakol Chayav in Tekiah Shofar, everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar, L'Asui Yemai, what is that coming to include? L'Asui Katan Shigil L'Chinuch. So it's including a child who has arrived at the point of Chinuch, Didnan, and here a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Ein Ma'akvin Esakatim L'Tkol B'Yom Tov. Right, your son wants to pick up the shofar and blow it, and blow the shofar, so by all means let him go. Right, until I get a headache. At that point in time, you could stop. So 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 that is the there's a mitzvah of chinuch even on the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar. The akol chayav mimikra megillah. This is a perfect place to stop because the megillah does go in encroach into a good part of tomorrow's daf. Okay, let's recap. Okay, our introduction to Erchin, we didn't discuss much about Erchin today. You probably noticed. So our introduction to Erchin, so Erchin is an instrument in which a person can donate to the Beis HaMikdash by offering somebody's Erech. Erech, right, I really love the way Ben said it. So the Erech is like an assessment. All right, the Torah gives us an assessment in terms of how to view people from an Erech standpoint based on gender and age. So you take those two, you open up a Chumash to the 27th Perek of Vayikra, and you will find out exactly how much you're obligated to give to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah opens up with the words Hakol Marichim V'Nerachin. Everybody can be involved in both the act of donating and being the object of donation. And then Hakol Nodrim V'Nidarim. And our Gemara opened up the discussion, which who is included in Erech, who is included in Ne'erach, and so forth and so on. And it really allowed the Gemara now the opportunity to say, okay, as long as we're here and we discuss the word Hakol, so what are we going to do regarding the words Hakol? On the first amud of today's daf, we did the hakol of erchin and marichin erachin and nodrin and darin. We also did the hakol as it relates to We did it in terms of smicha. Smicha was the on the amud aleph, and on the amud beis we did the hakol regarding sukkah and lulav. We did it regarding tzitzis and tefillin. We did it regarding the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel and the Olas Riya, and we did it regarding Shofar. Those are the topics that we covered in terms of the Hakol and who they're coming to include.